Good morning and welcome to worship at Forest Hills Baptist Church. We are delighted that you have come and decided to worship the Lord our God with us this morning. Whether you are in the room with us or you are joining us on our live stream service, wherever you may be, may God's presence be with you and in you as we enter into this moment of worship and praise. I want to point out and celebrate something this morning as a congregation. We're a little thin down here. Not thin, but there's a few less of us here this morning in the fellowship hall. We are so excited to celebrate the baptism of Caroline Murray, who's one of our seventh graders in the youth group, and she is upstairs celebrating with our church family and her family. So many of our friends and family that we usually see in the pews beside us are upstairs celebrating her baptism and this wonderful milestone, as they should be. So it's nothing you did wrong. Your friends will be back next week. You've showered, you've worn your deodorant, it's not on you, but there is something to be celebrated upstairs, and we are glad that our friends and family are up there supporting her as the church should, is, and does. There is also something that's really exciting this morning that I want to celebrate, and we have a special guest. We have actually two special guests with us this morning. We have a lot of new faces in the room, but there are two that are here by design. This morning, we are welcoming and celebrating our student ministry intern from Duke Divinity School, Sutton Lowe, and his wife, Marley. They are hidden in the room. I'm not going to make them stand up, but we are so excited to welcome them and celebrate them. I have had the pleasure. Yes. Yes. That is a big deal. I've had the pleasure of getting to know Sutton and his family over coffee and conversations this week, and this church has been so blessed and will be so blessed by their presence and their ministry with us, and we are so excited to welcome them, love them, and walk with them as they walk through seminary together, because having been on the other side of this journey, Sutton's not the only one in seminary, y'all. The wife is just as involved and probably has written just as many papers. My wife has written more seminary papers than I have, and I have the degree. So it really is a team effort, and we are going to love them and support them and treat them as such as we welcome them into our church family. So if you have your Bibles with you, and I hope you do, I invite you to turn with me to the first chapter of Genesis, starting in verse 1. You know, when Mark told me we were going to be walking through the entire Bible, I thought he meant today. So buckle up. I've got nowhere to be. And I'm not rewriting. I'm kidding. We're going to be reading the first chapter of Genesis. I invite you to follow along with me in your Bibles, whether they be paper or plastic, phones or whatever that is, or on the screen behind me. We are going to be reading the entirety of the first chapter. I am not above popcorn reading. So if I see you dozing off, you may be called upon to pick up where I left off. Beginning in verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning one day. Then God said, "Let there be an expanse of the midst of waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below, and an expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning a second day. Then God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth sprout up vegetation, plants yielding seed and fruit, and trees bearing fruit after their kind with seed in them on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind. and trees bearing fruit with seed in them and their kind, and God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, a third day. Then God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light to the earth. And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He made the stars also. And God placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth and to govern the day and the night and to separate the light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning and a fourth day. We're halfway there. Well, I guess four out of seven. Somewhat fractions. That's four more than half of seven. Then God said, let the waters teem with the swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of the heavens. And God created the great sea monsters and living creatures that move with which the waters swarmed after their kind, and every winged bird after its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth. And there was evening, and there was morning, a fifth day. Then God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle and of all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And God created man in his own image, in the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and the nurseries at Forest Hill Baptist Church, and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Then God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the surface of the earth, and every tree which has fruit yielding seed, and it shall be food for you. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to everything that moves on the earth, which has life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was morning, or there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all of their host. And by the seventh day, God completed his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. Let us in this hour and time together take the word of the Lord and wrestle with it and read into it, into the living of these days, so that we can take it out into the world and shine as a city on a hill to those around us. So we didn't get to it in our scripture reading this morning, but all of us know the story of what keeps happening if we were to continue in the scriptures, and God would make Adam and Eve. And I am reminded almost daily by my wife that the only time in Genesis that God made something and did not say it was good is after he made man. But he's probably right. But it's a wonderful story of creation and the awe and wonder of the world that surrounds us. And all too often in the hustle and bustle of our lives, of the crazy clutter that we've constructed from 9 to 5, or really if you're human and live where we live, 5 to 9, of soccer practice, baseball practice, work, 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 more work, meal prep, and then whatever is happening on the internet of the seven things that you have to do to be organized this week from whatever magazine article, which if you have time to read a magazine article, I want to talk to you and ask how. We do to fit into our lives. We become so disconnected from the created world around us that we've begun to miss it. And so rarely in our lives do we have the opportunity to look out over God's creation and take the deep breath and go, it is good. And I don't know about you, but especially in the last 18 months, that's been really the last thing that I've had the opportunity to do, which seems backwards. As the world stopped and everything slowed down to a screeching halt and there was nothing to do and there was no toilet paper, somehow I got busier. I have no idea how, but it happened. And now that the world's coming back, I'm getting busier. I can't stop. It's snowballing out of control and it's a problem. And I imagine that's the story of every single one of us here in the pews this morning. Whether you were 16 or 65, your world is speeding up at a pace in which you cannot control, keep up with, or contain. And fewer mornings come by where we get the opportunity to look out over the sunrise. Well, I'm not up at the sunrise, but I imagine if I was, I still wouldn't watch it and say, it is good. And the way that I see this played out best in our world today is I was watching a TV show. I don't even know what streaming service it was on because now instead of cable, I have to subscribe to like 17 different streaming services that just appear on my TV. Somebody else with the credit card information in my house makes them appear. And all of a sudden, I get sucked into where 7 nights in a row, I spend 4 hours of my evening binge-watching shows. It's a wonderfully unhealthy habit. And I'm in need of professional help. But one of the most recent ones we watched in our house was called The White Lotus. A lot of the things in that series are things that a good little Baptist boy like myself should have no business watching, which is everything on TV. But it's the story of an affluent family on vacation to Hawaii. And not like affluent family of like, oh, they have 2 cars and live in the suburbs. But, like, the wife's jewelry costs more than my house. Like, it's a 7-digit bracelet. I've never seen 7 digits except in a math problem, and I got it wrong. But a very well-off family who has all of the needs in their world taken care for them. They're off in this all-inclusive resort in Hawaii. And you see them start to wrestle with this lack of fulfillment and purpose and meaning in their lives. They want for nothing, they need for nothing, and somehow there's a gaping hole in their existence. And through all of the drama and the things that I don't think should be, like, how it's on TV, I have no idea. Like, when I was growing up, if these things were in a movie, they would have been in the back door of Blockbuster. You know the door that was, like, part of the wall that, like, they tried to hide where the movies that I've never seen are? Like, that's where this show belongs. I'm making a really good case for what I do with my free time with this, aren't I? But they, between all of the muck and the dirty humor, you see this beautiful story of this family start to see where true worth and value comes in, and they reconnect with one another, and they start to take in the awe and the beauty of God's creation around them, which they're in Hawaii, which, you know, if you can't do that there, you need help. And they leave their vacation closer together with the family with a better understanding of what is important in the world. But at the very end of their vacation, I think maybe the last episode of the series, the son raises something that I think puts words to all of our experience of whatever we call the 21st century. I don't know if we're in modernity, post-modernity, post-post-modernity, I don't know. Whatever this era we're in that just seems crazy, he is able to put words to it that speak to my experience, and I think probably speaks to yours as well. Over their time in this resort, the son starts to break free from all of his routines and structure and really the weight and yoke of the world he has waiting for him back home. And he actually starts to connect with the locals, that he doesn't really find what's happening at the resort as fulfilling or meaningful to him. And he finds friends with the locals who are the workers at the resorts, and he starts sleeping on the beach so that he can start to see the sunsets and the sun rise. And it's bringing this peace and fulfillment about him. But the real kicker is he becomes friends with these local guys who look like Michael Phelps on steroids. It's really depressing. And they are training for, they say it in Hawaiian, I'm not going to butcher it. They're training for this race. It's a rite of passage in their culture. As they come of age and become young men, they're going to row from one island to the next on this little dugout canoe, kind of a traditional, if you've seen Moana, you know what I'm talking about. And they're going to row from island A to island B, and they're short one person. So they invite this guy who looks like me, which is completely unathletic, to be on this boat with all these Olympians, and they start training every morning for sunrise for this boat race. And the vacation comes to an end, and the son says, I don't want to go home. I don't want to go home. I can't go home. I have found friends here. I have found meaning here. I have found fulfillment here. And mom and dad just completely missed the point. They're like, son, we'll go on more vacations. We'll get you that cell phone that you've been wanting. They literally say that. You know, we'll get you these items and things. We'll try a new private school. They keep trying to fix the problem with whatever at home isn't nice enough. And they just can't hear what he's saying. He's going, no, this is not it. And finally, in frustration, he has all, everything at home is dead. Everything at home is lifeless. It's dead. It's plastic. There's no teeth to it. Everything here is alive. And it ends up that he ends up sneaking off the plane as his parents go back home. And the final shot of the season is him on this boat race with his newfound friends as he has found meaning with community and connection and returning to the earth and seeing the awe and wonder around him. Now, as a youth pastor at the church, don't do that. To the young people in the front row, if your parents are getting on the plane, get on the plane. I've said that. I'm going to make all of you sign a waiver after service that you heard Sammy Joe's. Well, you're almost 18, so just wait. That's not the point. Do what your parents say. But it's this beautiful story that I think speaks to so many of us of we burn the candle at both ends, trying to catch something that we probably don't even know the name of or what it looks like, but it's the next or the next after the next or the five-year plan, seventh step in the process. And when we get there, we're going to figure it out. But when we're honest with ourselves, everything around us is dead. It's plastic. It's artificial. It has no fulfillment. By the time you've saved up to buy the iPhone, it's three versions too late. I know that because I just bought an iPhone, and it's three versions too late, and I can't do the next app update. That's not because I don't know how, looking at the row laughing. It's too old. Okay, I don't know how. Can y'all help me later? And we keep chasing things, and we've forgot what it means to have the awe and wonder as a child, as a new parent with two under two. I'm reminded of all the ways of which the things that I'm working for and around and with don't matter, because more often than not, the more expensive the toy, the less my kid cares. And to be honest, the thing that makes my kids happiest the most is a French fry. Like, all I want in life is to be as happy as my little girl when she gets a French fry. Like, I haven't smiled that hard. Oh, when I got married and met my wife, I smiled way more. All I want is to be as happy as my little girl when she gets a French fry, and somehow I keep falling into the trap of I have got to work more, I've got to make more money, I've got to do something, I got to get better, I'm not going to play golf. And we miss the beauty and wonder and awe around us. And we miss the opportunities in our life to say, it is good. Because I can tell you one thing, when my little girl bit into that French fry, which, by the way, she's a pandemic baby, and that was the first time she ever got to go to a restaurant. We went to Clues over by NC State's campus, because I'm a health nut, and she bit into that French fry, and she's like, it is good. And we've somehow lost what that is if we've grown up and done whatever it is that this world does to us. And I think there are moments in life that it does break through. Something comes and pierces through the reality of the mundane and the desolate, just dead world around us and brings us back to center, even if it's just for a moment. I know those moments come in fleeting memories in my life, and they become fewer and fewer as I get older. But it's often when we come into God's creation and presence that we are drawn back into that moment of wonder. I know probably the most awe-striking moment of my life is when I was on a trip in seminary to the Eastern Horn of Africa, where we were traveling through Uganda and Kenya and Tanzania, and we were staying at this little compound on the shore of Lake the shore of a lake, and there was an electric fence, and they told us it was to keep the hippos away from us. It looked like dental floss held up to a car battery, and I'm like, well, no one here's dead yet, and I'm at least quicker than the next guy, I'll be fine. And one morning, I'm walking to breakfast, and on the other side of this fence is a hippo. And I don't know if any of you have ever been, I didn't take that picture, but it was about like that. And if you've ever been face-to-face with a hippo, you all of a sudden understand what God's awe and splendor means in this world. And you also understand how helpless you are in this world. Because I don't care how many YouTube videos you've watched of a hippo eating a watermelon in one bite. When you're 3 feet from it and you see all those muscles and tendons and things happening in its nose, you're like, this thing could eat my Subaru. And it wouldn't even burp afterwards. And I realized that those little wires were not to keep the hippo from getting to me, but to keep me from being dumb enough to get to the hippo. Because if that thing decided to come at me, I don't think that car battery was going to make homeboy blink. But in that moment, even just for a minute, I was brought back into the awe and wonder of God's majesty in creation. And all the logistics and chaos of how are we going to get from A to B, and we're going to this orphanage, and we've got to get these things to these people to check these boxes to do our list, came to a screeching halt, and I was mesmerized at God's creation and wonder in the world of his fingerprints all around me. It was one of the most beautiful moments I've ever experienced. And we see that whenever we get to encounter God's awe and wonder. I know another one of mine is when we were doing missions to Northern Canada, because why not? And I happened to go on from mission to airport and took a detour to Banff National Park just because I can. And I thought I knew mountains growing up in North Georgia and visiting Asheville and all of those things. And we came upon Lake Moraine. And some of you have been to our national parks or up in Canada, and I don't care what that screen looks like. When you're there in person, words nor pictures do it justice, and it takes your breath away and knocks you off your feet. And you just can't understand it, and you're brought immediately back into God's awe and wonder. And we experience these moments in life, and somehow we come home from these experiences, and then we think we can buy it at REI, and that's going to somehow fix the need we have in our gaping holes in our lives. But when we remember that there are wonderful and beautiful things around us, I think it challenges something in us about the way we've structured our lives, and it's really difficult for us to admit it, because then we kind of have to raise our hand and say all the things that we've done wrong, or have aligned with, or put value in, or time and energy and effort into, and really how much backpedaling it's going to require from us to get out of these cycles and holes and rhythms, to get to a place where we can wake up routinely and see God's majesty around us and open our eyes and say it is good. One of my favorite paintings of all time came from a father of a young boy who was born a little different. I would say he was born with a lens in which he saw the world in ways we could not. doctors and scientists and others would, there's a condition and a name for that, then that's great and that's cool and there are medical reasons for it. But I would say this young boy was born with a lens in which he saw the world that we cannot. And his dad, being a wonderful parent and father, took notice of that and realized that his young son, Sam, had a lens in which he could see the world that the rest of us could not. And it was so captivating and so beautiful, it actually drove this father to paint this. This is actually a painting, this isn't a picture. To paint this picture of his son and enter it in the Atwin Boochiever, I think I said that right, portrait competition, which is put on by the Smithsonian Museum every 3 years. It's this big deal in the art world, and paintings and portraits come around from the entire world, and they're just these splendid works of art. It's this extremely prestigious award because your art gets to go in the Smithsonian, comes with a $25,000 check, that gets you motivated. And some of the most beautiful paintings of our era have come out of this competition. And Sam actually won it in 2005. But this painting is called Sam and the Perfect World. His dad's name is David Lenz. And he did his best to try and captivate the lens in which Sam saw the world around him. Because Sam's view of the world was immune to the clutter and the, I'm not going to use that word, the clutter and the noise around us that contaminates how we operate and live and what we put worth to and distract us from the things that have true meaning, and has been given this beautiful gift that everything's as pure as it was when we were children. And his dad calls it the perfect world. And in 2005, when he submitted this painting, the artist statement that went with it, his dad, David, said, "We become so consumed and distracted by the world around us of perfection and supermodels and magazines and social media wasn't quite out at this time, but I assume if it was what it is today, he'd be lamenting about Instagram and Twitter and, well, Facebook is no... Does anybody under 30 have a Facebook? Actually, people under 18 raise their hand. I feel hipper than I thought I was. But supermodels and movie stars and magazines and TV ads paint a picture around us of what we're supposed to be and will make us happy. And what will bring us fulfillment and joy and worth in this world. And have convinced us to chase them and to chase things that aren't real." And he goes on to talk about what his son follows and chases, is captivated in wonder. And it's not the things you see on TV. It's not the Cracker Jack toy at the bottom of the cereal box, which my 2-year-old lays face first down in the aisle. I now understand all the Jeff Foxworthy jokes about kids in the cereal aisle as a parent. But also the little cheap plastic toys that we put in our adult lives that we somehow feel that when we get to the bottom of the box are going to make the journey worth it or justify the means of which we use to obtain them. And if it's not there, then maybe it's just a little bit deeper down in the box, or we got the wrong box, or we need a more expensive box, or my neighbor had a better one, and I need to figure out how to get their box. But Sam saw the world in which the way God intended it to be, which was for something to be experienced and not obtained. Which growing up was something that I feel like we're all born with, but lose somewhere from the culture around us. Because one of my little boys, Henry, he's 2.5, he goes to preschool here, which God bless Carla Smith, our preschool director, because there's a special place in heaven for you and all of you who deal with my oldest and those like him. One of his favorite Disney characters is John Smith. Right? You remember the Disney movie Pocahontas? And John Smith is this big Captain American-like figure. I guess he's Captain Britain, isn't he? A figure that comes to the New World to conquer it and to get gold and to climb mountains and to fight battles. And he wears armor and a cool hat. I really want that hat. My wife said I can't get a musket, so I got to get the hat. And Henry wants to be like John Smith. And he goes outside and wants to cut down trees because that's what big, strong men do. I don't know where he learned that because it would take me a very long time to cut down a tree. But I guess it's from Disney movies. And you can see the way that the world around us is teaching a two-year-old what's going to make him matter and bring him value. But the beautiful thing about Pocahontas in the movie, which I've begun to see and read into and understand more now as an adult, because let's be honest, I did not pick up on this when I was two. There was tomahawks and there was guns and there was fire. I was really excited. But as an adult, when we go back, there's something really deep and profound happening in the movie of these people who come to this place and it's beautiful and gorgeous and untainted, and as God meant it to be, and it's magical and mythical, and everywhere around you, you look and say, it is good. And they're there to conquer it, dig it up, cut the trees down, build forts. And as you watch the movie, everywhere that John Smith and the army goes, it's just mud and death and desolate wasteland. But they're captivated by this idea of the frontier, that whatever's waiting for us on the edge, whenever this isn't what we're meant to have, but whenever we get there, it's going to be great. Doesn't sound like the way in which we live our lives at all, does it? Now, if you dress like John Smith, I have questions. But the idea of this wasteland and wake of destruction we live behind us to achieve whatever this glorious thing is out on the edge. The frontier hasn't been part of American culture for a long time, but it still dominates the way in which we orchestrate our lives. And in one of the best Disney songs of all time, which I would sing it for you if we had the copyrights, but I don't, so I'm sorry. Of the colors of the wind, the great theologian Pocahontas reminds us something really profound that I think is bleeding through the text this morning of you can own the earth and still all you'll own is earth until you can paint with all the colors of the wind. Which to me, as an adult paying taxes in the 21st century, I'm like, you can't paint with the wind. I have an art degree. Checkmate. Doesn't work. Country song told me to buy dirt because it has a lot of value and I can make a profit from it. So I don't know what you're talking about, Pocahontas. But when we go back into the texture and the scripts, that's really what's happening in Genesis 1 of nowhere. When God put humankind over earth, did God say the earth is yours? It's yours to control, manipulate, market, and whatever business terms I didn't learn as an art major back to turn around into capitalism. He says we have dominion over the animals and the birds and the plants and the trees, but not as owners, but as caretakers and as family members. And we see that playing out in that beautiful Disney movie, which speaks more than my words could ever bring to us, but reminds us something this morning that I think we as adults, truly, and as a society have lost, is our whole end game is to own it. Our whole end game is to control it. Our whole end game is to make it mine. And for us to do that, we have to do something really kind of backwards in our own theology, in our mind, in their spiritual walk, because to own it, it can't have a name, it can't have an identity, it can't have a personality, it can't be something that I connect with and have a spiritual relationship with, because then to own it would be immoral, which I think we all agree with. So we push the world and the things and creation and wonder around us into the corner and down and bury it deep beneath to justify the ways in which we interact with it. And the problem with that is when we lose our wonder, we have lost the ability to see the world through God's eyes. When we lose our wonder of going into the forest and experiencing it as God has created it and finding my Disney princess animal sidekicks, which I still really want. I want mine to be a porcupine. I don't think it's ever going to happen. But when we go and have lost the wonder, we've lost the ability to see the world through God's eyes. And I don't just mean this in some Henry David Thoreau way where I'm telling all of us to sell all of our things, go buy a pair of Chacos and an Eno hammock. If you don't know what that is, ask a teenager, they'll help you. And go out into the woods and become one with nature and do yoga. If you do that, that's great. God didn't build my elbows that way. I can't. But when we lose our wonder of the creation around us, we've lost our ability to see the world through God's eyes and seeing the world around us, both in nature and in need. When we lose our wonder, we lose our ability to see our neighbor who is we are required by God to love and to care for and to invite in. When we lose the wonder of the world around us, tragedies that we are experiencing right now, both in our country and abroad, the anniversary we celebrated yesterday of 20 years since 9/11, when we lose our awe and wonder of the world, tragedies become a statistic and not a reality. When we lose the wonder of the world around us, it becomes separate from us, and we are not in it, but somehow above it. And if the world is going to hell in a handbasket, we're getting in the lifeboat and getting the heck out, which is in nowhere what God preached to us in the Gospels. And is in no way what God intended in the first chapter and change that we read this morning in Genesis, where God looked out over all of creation and said, it is good. Didn't say it once, didn't say it twice, said it seven times. And if I had time, I'm well aware of it, we talk about seven and why that was important and why God said it is good after each milestone, because it wasn't just the collective whole that was good. It was each member of the body was good. Because as my family story can attest and many of yours here, if part of the body has cancer, the whole body has cancer. You don't get to discredit or separate yourself just because it's not your problem. And when we lose our wonder of the world around us, we lose the ability to see ourselves as a member of the body. And when we do that, we lose the ability to be the presence in Jesus Christ in this world. So as we wrap up and go back out into the world this morning, and I challenge you to see it through the eyes of a child, of one with wonder and anticipation and awe, I want to challenge you to open yourself up to have encounters with the creation around you, because that's what God made the world to be. And I don't mean like the weird, trendy Instagram influencers, which none of you should follow on Instagram. Please stop. That, you know, like wake up and there's this bad haiku about the sunrise. You don't have to do that. If that's your thing, that's great. But open yourself up into the world around you. Pay attention into what God made the world around you to be and your place in it. Because when we open ourselves up to encounter God's creation, we open ourselves up to have an encounter with the risen Christ. Because I would imagine most of us could not raise our hand today and say that on a regular occurrence in our adult life, do we have indistinct, undeniable, life-changing encounters with Christ like we might have that one time on Friday night at the youth summer camp. That they become fewer and further between the deeper we get into the world around us. And we don't get to choose to have encounters with Christ without having encounters with the world that Christ created around us. because Christ is in the world around us in every living, breathing thing. And we don't get to pull the ripcord, jump out of the plane with our parachute, get on the lifeboat, or get on the train and go somewhere else while God's creation, children, and world goes to hell in a handbasket. Our privilege as being born in this wonderful nation, which I love dearly, means that we get to pretend we're separated from a while. Now, don't hear me wrong. I'm not getting on to our nation about that. That's not what I'm doing. But it's easy when we have the resources to do so, to think that we're allowed or have the ability to separate ourselves from what's around us. Let's pray. God, I thank you for the opportunity to come and worship together as a family of faith today in your house. One, we recognize that our brothers and sisters across the world are being persecuted this morning for trying to do the very thing we're doing here today. As we go from here and go out into the world in which you created, God, I ask that you open our eyes, open our arms, and open our hearts to experience the wonder and awe of your creation, so that we can see the presence of your Son Christ all around us. Pray all of these things in your name. Amen. As we come to close our worship this morning, the band begins to play our final song. If you would like to come forward and join this church in the ways in which we accept members, or just want to raise your hand and say, I want to be part of the team. If God has been wrestling with your heart and your spirit and it's just been in and out of your head at night when it's just you and the ceiling fan, and you feel that God is calling you to take your next step in your faith journey, whether that's a profession of faith, a baptism, or whatever it looks like for you, or you just need someone to stand with you in the gap of the world falling apart around you and pray, myself and some of our deacons and leaders will be in the back of the room to welcome you, love you, and stand with you in this moment of your life. And we invite you that there is nothing on the other side of worship that's more important of what you have to do with God right now. So as we come and stand our final song, we invite you to come and do whatever it is that God is calling you to do in this time and this place. Let us sing.